Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone. It is the Red Men Podcast. I am Paul Machin. Ross Chanley is with me in the studio. We've got Sam Walker and the incredible Steve Hoare as well joining us for this one. We're going to be talking about a little bit more on Southampton. We're going to talk a bit about Manchester United and the rest of the running games for the Reds as well. But we do have a kickoff question before we dive into it. In fact, we've got two. The first one, everyone strap yourselves in. If you've got a cup of tea, get it ready. It comes from Jith, who's one of our club legend subscribers over on theredmentv.com. This is from our Discord group. He says, next season for Liverpool is the most incredible season as a fan. I hope that's true. Full stadiums are back again. We get an incredibly dramatic title race against Manchester United with a last minute goal against Chelsea on the final day of the season to win the league. A la Aguero 11-12 and other dramatic wins across the season. We also win the Champions League and FA Cup in dramatic fashion too, e.g. Barca semi-final plus Istanbul comebacks in the European Cup and West Ham 06 in the FA Cup final to secure the treble. The caveat, however, is that you are only allowed to watch the next 15 seasons on your own with no TV sound being played. You're also not allowed to communicate to anyone about the Reds during the game and not allowed to see fellow Reds on the day of the game either. Do you accept? Do you accept, Ross Chanley?
Absolutely not, no. I'm in this for the ride.
Selfish!
I'm in this for the ride, not the success, mate. Also, I've done one season of that and it's shit. So I'm fine with that. I'm understanding Liverpool will win things in the next 15 years or 10 seasons or whatever it was, rather than just one.
No, but Liverpool can win things for the next 15 seasons. You're just not allowed to watch it with the sound on. That's selfish, though. You're stealing happiness from every single Liverpool fan across the globe.
I don't get a lot of
because you like to have the sound on your telly.
Yeah, fuck it. Actually, yeah, go ahead. You convinced me. You convinced me.
Disgrace. Obviously, I'm exempt because I can't do my job. I need the news.
Oh yeah, that as well. Yeah.
Sam, would you take on for the team?
No, what the fuck. I don't watch football to watch Liverpool win the treble. You know what I mean? It's amazing when we win things and it's great fun with the lads and giving other fans a bit of stick. You know, comes part and parcel. But I watch football for what it is. You know, the social side of things with your friends, the chat before the game on the day, and work around work with the likes of you guys. So no, for me it's the ride. Like Ross just said, it's the experience of going to the pub before the game. You know, even if you lose sometimes, it's a good day out, you know what I mean? Especially those away trips, you know, the Hodgson era. I was there, home and away. So, you know, it was shit, but it was still great, you know what I mean? So, yeah. No, big fat no for me.
It is the social side of things of footy, isn't it? And I guess there are probably lots of people who'd be like, yeah, whatever, I'd do that anyway, Steve. But, you know, again, I know from my personal perspective, to Ross's point, I have just been sat in this room for the last year watching Liverpool with no sound on the telly. I mean, and I would be doing that, except I wouldn't even have Chris to talk to anymore, which is, you know, pros and cons.
SMR streams.
It would be shite. But it... Yeah, you know, I mean, maybe you can publicise to the world that you're the reason why it happened, I don't know.
Yeah, you are taking one for the team, but no, I absolutely not. I'd rather everyone else not enjoy it and I have a bad time than me be miserable. I love going on the match. I'm like, some of the best away days we've had when we got beaten. It's crap when you Liverpool lose, but like that's part of it. I mean, I'm sat in a service station with you at 2 o'clock in the morning eating a McFlurry, laughing our heads off after we got beat by Liverpool. just mad. it was ridiculous. It was stupid. It was fun. And no, listen, mate, I've had enough of sitting in the house watching footy. I just can't wait to go back to ground. Like, go meet all my mates, like you said. Like, I started taking my son to the match just before lockdown. Like, his first game, proper Liverpool game, was other than like the friendlies and stuff, was Bournemouth, which was just before lockdown. To say that I can't do that in 15 years, I mean, absolute nonsense. My lad's going to get, he'll be 18 before he, or 20 or before he goes to the game. So,
yeah,
as much as it would be great to see Liverpool have that season that Jith mentions, where it's, I mean, also, like, I'm not in the best of health. I mean, that might kill me. Like, three. Aguero, Istanbul, West Ham trio of years. I might die. And I'm not quite ready to die. I've stayed indoors for a year and a half, so I don't die. So, like, I'm not ready to just.
Shares in Pot World, did that happen, I think?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sorry to all those fans who would love that season, but I am far too self-centred and self-centred.
Steve would be like, if I can just change the question so that every other Liverpool fan on the planet has to sit inside and notice, but I get to go to games and celebrate it. Like, but you, yeah, just you, you at Villa Park on your own, snogging the face off Thiago Alcantara.
There's something that Steve wants you to know. I mean, all right,
absolutely. Yeah, you'll never walk alone. It would be a bit weird, wouldn't it? Right, we have a second question. Cambo 1508 on Twitter says, who from the Redmen TV would be most likely to beat Takeshi's Castle?
Ooh.
Everyone gets the Takeshi's Castle thing, right? Everyone knows what that is? Just checking.
Yeah.
Good.
So what are we talking? Bridge ball, stepping stone.
And then little tank things at the end.
But I think you said we were shit, weren't we, with the water pistols?
I always got the impression that I really wanted to see the unedited, like, subtitled version, because I got the feeling we were missing large chunks of the story to get his cattle, because I'm like, and there's something to do with the tags. And it's over. Yeah. Well, hang on a second. What? So no one beat it this week? Is that what happened?
I'd probably go Dutton or Pajak.
He just go through the wall.
Jesus Christ.
In fact, no. He gets sick before he got to bridge ball. He catch something. Pajak's my answer.
Go on, Steve. You seem to be taking umbrage with the Pajak Dutton shouts.
Tom hasn't got no patience, so it can't be Tom. Like those games where you've got to be patient about it, he's not having it. Chris, yeah. I mean, imagining Chris getting across those stepping stones that sink is hilarious to me. Like, honestly, first of all, no one ever beat Takeshi's Castle, and if it was up to us to beat it, I think we're in trouble, all of us.
Yeah,
I don't think any of us have got massive skill sets to do it.
Listen, that's why it's phrased most likely, not who will definitely beat it.
Yeah, that's my worry, is that I'm struggling to find anyone because of there's clear character flaws in every single one of us.
physical flaws.
Anything that involves speed, I'm out. Like, done.
Yeah.
Like, a turn of foot, I'm in trouble. Oh, I think Sam would actually have a good chance.
There's a better one than me, though, Steve. Georgia.
Georgia's
a professional football player. He's got the edge on me, definitely.
Yeah, professional. I should have really went for the professional athlete over Sam.
The one professional athlete that we know. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That just shows how high I am, Sam.
I think that's a good shout. I think Georgia might well win that one this time around. In terms of Redmen hosts, because I was working through my head, I was like, it's definitely not me. It's definitely not you, Ross, with the greatest of respect. It's like saying, listen, don't take offence, but no one was ever not offended after that sentence.
Slow, unathletic, unintelligent. With all due respect, son. That's what he's just said to you.
Just missing a pat on the head. That's all it needed.
Go on, Paul. Do it, Paul. What about Ben?
No, neither of us. No. Ben's unfortunately not in his most athletic, either for a variety of reasons. I don't think Si could do it. I think Tom's a decent shout because he's in much better health than he has been for a number of years. He's got a girlfriend now. He's a bit more healthy. He's clean living, Dutton, we call him. No one's ever called him that. But I was looking at Amy and Lauren as well. Amy's got dodgy knees, and Lauren's probably slightly too short for certain things. If there's any jumping and reaching challenges, you know that's a fundamental flaw there. So I reckon Tom's a good all rounder. And look, to be fair, Chris goes at that 100 miles an hour, and he either succeeds or he is the most hilarious failure you've ever seen in your life. That's what you go for. You don't want to go for people for these things. You go, like that ninja warrior. Oh, I'll just do those steppings. I'll jump over to one. No, you want someone to go full tilt, bang, 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 go across it. And Chris would do that, and he would probably die. Yeah. But he might have his momentum.
Shoot the balls at you when you're walking across the bridge. Chris would be amazing at that because he would just go like he'd have no fear of getting smashed by them balls. He would be like, I'm
all no context reference right there.
He's like, get those balls in my face, is what Chris would be saying.
Bring on all those balls. Chris has also got the incredible talent of being incredibly lucky with stuff when a camera's pointed at him. Like he did a no-look black ball finish on Bazinga's, I think it was, YouTube channel when he was bladdered. Couldn't have done that if he tried in a million years, but he was being filmed by a channel with like a million subscribers.
So Chris did Takeshi Castle smash. Did he do it?
Give Chris a couple of pints and make sure it's live, and then he'd probably be laughing. Chris
is deceptively quick.
Yeah. I equated Chris to like a young Wayne Rooney, where you never thought he was fast, but if he needed to be fast, his body would evolve. His aggression, his inner aggression, would make him what he needed to be for that given fighting situation. Yeah,
he does get angry as well. He gets angry.
Compare Chris to a young Wayne Rooney. There, that's him. Finished for the week. That in it, he's fucking made up now. That's him done. Wayne Rooney. Well,
that anger. Chris, well, when he's competitive. Like, he threatened to beat me up once on a footy pitch. And I'm like, good mates. And he's like, he's going to kill me. So,
exactly. He's got a big scar on his head from where he tried to foul me in five aside, and I sidestepped him and he fell in. He smacked his head on the barrier. Have a look next time you see him. Hi, Chris. Good fight. I think Chris wins. I genuinely think Chris would be our. It's a no lose situation. We either win Takeshi's Castle or you get the most hilarious episode of Takeshi's Castle of all time.
We should make that a thing, like the Crystal Maze remake that we did. Just let's go and do that for a day out.
Yeah. If anyone wants to watch that on the channel, I'd be more than happy to
sit down and direct it.
We're going to be talking about a little bit on Southampton from the weekend, looking ahead to Man United. Obviously, play Leicester tonight and the final three games in a moment, and a little update from Spirit of Shankly in terms of conversations with the owners. We're first taking a short break. I spoke to the Athletic's James Pearce. Quite a wide-ranging interview about Liverpool's transfers and potentials for what they're going to do in the summer, and a few other topics as well. Have a little look at this.
My colleague David Ornstein wrote the story back at the end of March that Konaté was, Klopp's top target in terms of defensive reinforcements in the summer, and I think we said then that talks were at a pretty advanced stage and how it wasn't done, but we kind of expected it to get done, and I'm not aware that the situation has changed since then, really. It's still not 100% done because, that conversation with Leipzig hasn't happened yet in terms of either negotiating the fee or just straight up paying his release clause, which is probably, what I think there's a realisation that is probably what's going to have to happen. I don't really see Leipzig being prepared to let him go for anything less than that release clause. So, I think clearly he's someone that Liverpool have had their eye on for quite some time. I think he fits the profile in terms of, speed, aerial prowess, young, hungry, loads of potential to unlock. I think he ticks a lot of the boxes for Klopp, Konaté. I think maybe probably after what's happened with a couple of deals in not too distant past, it's probably worth remembering it's not 100% done until he's actually wearing a Liverpool shirt, but Fekir had a Liverpool shirt on and that still didn't happen. let's wait and see. But yeah, certainly I'd be very surprised if that didn't happen this summer.
Yeah, we need to find out what's replaced the Melwood Lean. The extra training ground lean doesn't have the same sort of ring, does it?
Yeah. I wish I could tell you, but I haven't even been there yet. It's with obviously the bubble and the lockdown and stuff. It's it's been a long wait to step through the doors of that new plush building.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone, welcome back. Yes, you can check out the full James Pearce interview right now. It's streaming on the RedmenTV.com. Really, really interesting stuff. Obviously, a little bit on the Spirit of Shankly FSG stuff, and then talking about Ibrahima Konate, going on to Liverpool's midfield goal scoring issues and the Salah contract situation and what Liverpool are likely to do and how they're going to approach the transfer market. There's some really interesting stuff and a whole host of other amazing things. On there is a little streaming service for Liverpool fans, a bit like Netflix for Reds. So if you want that kind of stuff in your life, then go and check it out. And you get loads of bonus content from this show as well and these shows. Some more studio-based Redmen stuff. What more could you ask for? Right. Yes, SOS. I said for an FSG follow-up meeting, Ross. The statement reads, Spurs of Shankly to meet with Liverpool FC hierarchy this week. The aim is to hear the club's response to our requests and to make progress towards reaching agreements. We will keep members informed when we have any updates. Yeah, we talked about that at length last week about the first meeting and what little we knew that kind of come out of it. Nothing really, it's just more just an update. You know, hopefully by the end of this week, I think we'll have a clear picture of what the club's stance is, and obviously we'll hopefully have a clearer picture of where Spirit of Shankly stands, and then we can sort of start to formulate what happens next, really.
Yeah, I think I've changed my mind slightly from last week. I think I just said it was kind of a token gesture, or that's what it kind of felt like, but I think the speed of the process is helping me get to the point where it's like, oh, maybe it's not. So good on them, but, you know, we can't really judge anything right now, but fair play to Liverpool for doing that. And, you know, I think they've also been slightly pressured by the likes of Chelsea and other clubs that are starting to do things as well, that all powers on top of them, and the fact that they probably didn't have a choice. But
you've got Chelsea at one end who are seeking to a point, I think it's a couple of fan representatives to the board, two or three, and then at the other end you've got Man United fans who are raising demonstrations again, and their owners are still putting out apology letters periodically and all that kind of stuff. And Liverpool it's a decision point, really, Steve, where which way do Liverpool's fan base go? Are they going more towards legitimacy and board representation, or are we going back to the barricades? I guess we'll know in the next week or so.
Again, we don't know. We remember the full list of requests that SOS put in and stuff. And I think that it is just the case of Liverpool are going to come back and say yes, no, or, you know, however they work it. I can't imagine PR-wise, it'd be great if they just say no. You know what I mean? Like if they turn into the fella off the Vicar of Dibley and just whack all those no's out. So I think we've got to be careful. Like, I think that's a PR thing. So I imagine there must be something in it. For them to come back so quickly, I imagine there's something that they're happy with. But we mentioned on the show I was on last time when we spoke about this, is that PR-wise, it's a very delicate balance for Liverpool, because if you can't, it's impossible, I think, to just agree to everything, because commercially it makes no sense. But then on the flip side, you can't just write it all off and say no, because then what Ross says is that everyone goes, well, that was just a waste of time. You know, you've done that at the time. Calm was down for 2 weeks while Man United were getting the ground smashed up. So they've got to be careful. And I think the majority of the Liverpool fan base are edging more towards what you said, the legitimacy side. I don't think anyone is really ready to go and, you know, like you mentioned before, go to the barricades like we did for Hicks and Gillette. But I think there are more people right in the middle, edging more towards the Chelsea side than they are, you know, I think it must be more positive towards them. I think they have took a
Well, it's demonstrated. It was demonstrated by the SOS poll. You know, the members were polled and asked what the approach should be. And 69% of votes unequivocally said, you know, no to just walking away and protesting FSG out. So, you know, I mean, this isn't like a Brexit situation where there's a slim margin to it or whatever. The vast majority of that. And, you know, okay, SOS don't speak for the full, you know, range of Liverpool fans, but the more people who are members of Spirit of Shankly, the more of a cross section they do represent, and that's kind of what we've got in this situation.
Yeah, I like saying, mate, it'll be interesting. I'm interested to see which ones Liverpool come back with. It's, you know, I imagine there's some type of representation on the board, or maybe a subcommittee or something that might be where they go down with. Listen, we'll run certain things by you, that kind of thing. We'll try and work, which is on. Like the community stuff, I can't imagine them saying no to that. But then I think there's other parts where they go, actually, you know, the golden vote and all that. I just can't see that happening. But again, like I think the important thing was what Ross said is that it's obviously high on the agenda because it was a week ago when they're already back in talks. So they're obviously keen to get it done. But again, whether that's PR wise or it's a genuine hope and to build bridges, either way, it's good that they're acting so quickly on it.
Yeah, they have to be careful though with this, don't they, Sam? It'd be interesting to see how this gets timed because, you know, we're a couple of days out from the Man United game. There's going to be Man United fan protests ahead of that. They're already starting to barricade Old Trafford in preparation for it. You know, you don't want a situation where, I mean, it's good, you know, I mean, in some regards it might mean Liverpool delay, but if we find anything out in the next couple of days, it speaks to the confidence that they've got that they can get a deal done, because if it goes wrong, Liverpool fans will be all over that protest as well.
Yeah, we've got one home game left, haven't we? So I can't imagine anything will be set in stone until after the Palace game, because no matter what decision they take, it may annoy some groups anyway, regardless to even if it appeases the most, there'll still be some that aren't happy whichever way around you go. It's actually a good opportunity for Liverpool because we spoke before about, you know, I'm sceptical about any fans being on any board because I'm afraid of the commercial decisions that they might block. Hence, would we have sold Melwood? Another story. But it's an opportunity. I like Steve's sort of angle. A subcommittee makes complete sense. Anything to do with the localisation of Anfield and around the sort of use of the name of the city and how it involves fans en masse, it makes sense to involve a Liverpool fan or, you know, someone who's got an experience in dealing with finance or football clubs who's a strong Liverpool fan or connections to the city, because you then get a better idea. The golden vote thing, I agree, I don't see that coming back. And just as a side note to this, I've got on good authority that some of the things that Liverpool have been absolutely trashed for, like the tickets, never got to board level. It was an operating decision. So I think sometimes these decisions won't even get to the board. It's an operating decision made. And then FSG are out going, we're sorry, you know, it happens. So fans might not even get a say on it because it's an operating decision. So I think it's quite complicated, the process. I just really think it's an opportunity for Liverpool to win a battle here. Because Chelsea fans ain't getting a say. Got no chance. But if Liverpool get this right, we can absolutely be the model moving forward because of the type of club we can be.
It's such a hard balance, isn't it? Because I agree with Steve, they can't say yes to everything because, A, for the commercial stuff, but also negotiation tactics. You can't be seen to be bent over a barrel because they've fucked up.
And this is why I also think SOS, you go with your absolute ideal and you probably actually go with a little bit more than you're hoping for as well. That's how, you know, you go with negotiations. You don't go with what you'd accept. Yeah. You go with what you beyond what you want.
Yeah, but it's also hard from our perspective because we're looking at it from a fan's perspective. But I think sometimes we have to look at it from FSGs and a business model as well. If they're not going to say yes to everything because they've got A, their own interests, and B, the club. At some point, they will have the club's interest at heart as well. So maybe if they say no to something, we can't take umbrage with it because it might be the best overall outcome.
That's a fine balance. Listen, you might find it's mad, but you know, you know, we're talking about this. You might find when you get fan representation on the board and they come to and go, right, we've got the Super League thing, and they explain it. What if the fans go, oh, actually, that makes sense. You know, I mean, you know, it's an outlandish sort of situation, but it's a positive step, hopefully, and we'll know a bit more as it happens in the coming days. And of course, yes, we will report on it. But I've said this before, you know, SOS have positioned themselves brilliantly here. They've been a brilliant voice for Liverpool fans for a long, long time now. You know, they've been going. They started not long before we did, which is, you know, over a decade now. And so, yeah, you know, this, they're going to be pivotal. So people want to get involved, and I would recommend signing up and joining as an SOS member, because, you know, they're going to be our advocate in this situation. Then we all want to be as a bigger part of this as possible. So, yeah, go and get involved on Spirit of Shankly. Right, Southampton, stay. A win, not a vintage win, but a vital win.
Pretty much nailed it. That's what you're going to have to be, isn't it? Because we're not playing very well, but it's the whole thing of, you know, mentality monsters kind of thing. This is what we have to be, because we're not at our best. You know, we've got every defender out and it's just mental. I actually thought attacking-wise we were all right. Like, we still created a fair enough chances. Having the best goal in the world helps. Like, that's just, you know, when you're throwing the team out that we throw out, your goalie's going to have to play well. That's just, we're going to have to rely on that. Like, to get through to the end of the season, it depends on who comes back and stuff. Like, Alisson's going to have a really good end to the season, because by his own high standards this year, he has dropped a little bit. I think that's fair to say. Yeah. Like, you know, he has kicked a few in and stuff or whatever. So I think that was the main thing for me, is that having a goalie with his mojo back is a big help. We will always create chances, and I'd always baffled to score one of them. In the past, I'd have said three or four. I'm not there yet, but, you know, we've got the attacking players who can create stuff. It's going to be hard at the other end, so the goalie is going to have to be on top of us. That was the biggest positive for me, is that Alisson looked like Alisson again. You know, he had that one dodgy kick which he got away with, which that's been in his locker a little bit this year. But other than that, you know, he was making the big saves where, for a while, it felt a few years ago, he was making saves that you wouldn't expect him to make. And then he had a period where he was good, but he wasn't pulling out the absolute worldie. Where I thought the Shadens one-on-one, when he just stays big, it looks easy, but that's a really, really top save. Things like that. That was the main positive for me. And if he can continue that for the next couple of games, we've got a sniff at winning them again. How other things around the league pan out isn't in our hands, but having him back on top form is huge.
The Alisson thing, I think, I completely agree with that, Sam. I think is massive, because it was like a throwaway comment on a video on my channel the other week about, like, we got the best goalie in the world, and they go, oh, he's not the best goalie in the world. And you realise that, I mean, he is. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, people who are in the Oblak camp will be in that camp forever, fine. When I say best player in the world, I mean, you know, you can put a piece of paper between the lads who are at that sort of level of the game. But Steve's right. You know, he's not been quite at that level this season. And it, because of the team we are now, I always think about when you get, like, I remember having a debate about Rafa Benitez and in fact, it was Aubrey back in the day saying we actually needed a manager toward the tail end of Rafa. We didn't need Rafa as a manager, because if we weren't going to be able to back him, to fund him to be the top tier manager, we actually need a manager who was better off at scrapping for fourth, which is a mad argument. But the point on Alisson is, if we're going to be a bit crap defensively, then you need someone who's really good at saving shots. Yeah. And Alisson, you know, hasn't quite been at that this season. There's a few goals we've conceded where you've gone, could maybe he have done better, but we need him, like, you know, that game there is exactly what we need him to be, is when he goes out and goes, no, I am the best goalie in the world. I'm not just a lad who's really good at passing and, you know, and just being gorgeous. I'm really good at saving the footy as well. And it's just Steve's point. We're going to need that between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, anyone who's offended by Alisson being the best keeper in the world needs to give the head a wobble, like you said. It's like being offended when someone says Ronaldo is. Jesus Christ, you know. Yeah. But, yeah, mate, absolutely. One of the things you're saying about the kick there, Steve, if you pass the ball back to the goalkeeper 150 times the game of football, I'm sure his passing out's not going to be 150 out of 150. And it's expected he's going to get one wrong, which is where we've kind of been, haven't we, a bit of late. You know, stop passing the ball back all the time and maybe he won't kick it to their lad once. But he is the man back there. I think, though, Paul, the saves he's made in the Southampton game are saves that other goalkeepers don't make, because they don't make the same decisions he does when he comes out. Like that whole weight hold. We've heard him talk about it before. It's almost like Henry as a striker, isn't it? The moments he talks about that are really pivotal. He talks about it and says, you know, he waits and he holds it. He had the touch, then he makes himself big and stuff like that. Because he does that, he sets his bar higher than most. So then when he doesn't do it, we're all like, where was that, Alisson? But actually, it's just his greatness not shown for a moment. So I agree with you that we need him to be on top form for the next four games. But I still think he deserves, and I still think by the same token, he hasn't been at his best this season at some parts. But by God, without him, we'd be 5, 6, 7 points worse off.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's also scrutinised by the fact that we've just been shit this season. Everything's been a bit shit. So when something else goes wrong, it's like just piles on top of one or the other. And then you're pointing fingers. So he could make a mistake in a game, but it's all right. Last season before, because we'd win. So it didn't matter.
Goalkeeping errors are always highlighted more in teams that aren't playing brilliantly. And so, like, you know, and that's my point, is that you might make an argument that you could really do with like a David De Gea type. And by that I mean just a pure shot stopper. You know, someone like him might have actually stood up a bit, looked better in our team because you're having more shots to face. But you know what we've seen is when Alisson steps up and does the shot stopping thing as well, which you mean like it's a sound, but he's so good in them one on ones. He's absolutely unbelievable. Then it kind of takes the scrutiny off a little bit. I just want to move it forward and talk about the defence, Ross. Van Dijk, Gomez, Matip, Kabak, Davies, and technically Jordan Henderson, all lads who could play centre half for us, who were all unavailable for that game at the weekend. It's an absolute piss take.
I think they're the same as us. I said this for a few weeks now. Just get to the end of the season. I'm sure Fabinho's like, oh, for fuck's sake, I've had a couple of games in midfield now. I'll probably have to go back again at some point, maybe on Thursday night. It just doesn't help rhythm or anything, or, you know, motivation, confidence, anything like that. And probably to Alisson's point as well, he's probably like, he's got to be more on the ball because there's another centre-back partnership or two inexperienced lads in front of him. So he has to step up then because he's got, 19-year-old in Nat Phillips, 24, 25. Mm-hmm. You know, he has to step up then as well. It just knocks the whole thing. And when you think it can't get any worse, it does. So I wouldn't be surprised on Thursday if there's another one.
Yeah, well, it'll just happen, won't it? I mean, that's the thing, Steve. It's that we've all become very sort of accepting of it. Not in like a happy way, but what I mean is it doesn't really get talked about as much anymore. Like Liverpool not having Kabak, like that's now, say what you will about Phillips, but like Kabak is now technically our fourth choice centre half because we've gone out and spent, you know, okay, we got him on loan, but you take my point on this, is like he's a senior centre half we've bought. We've gone out, you know, and brought him into the squad for this purpose. It's mad. The levels to which we have been damaged at the back there. And I mean, the fact that we come away with a clean sheet is probably probably one of the biggest successes of the game all told. But I've run out of superlatives for it. It's insane. And it doesn't end. It just doesn't end. The two lads we brought in January to help solve this problem are both injured.
I'd like to know what's happening in training for a start. If I'm the manager, yes. I wouldn't have been training. I'd like just go and sit down. What are you here for? Go and
get the PlayStation VR out. Just like
Kabak should be walking around in bubble. He should have been around in bubble back. And listen, I've openly admitted I'm not his biggest fan, but like he's clearly, with all due respect to Reece Williams, he's miles better than Reece Williams. Poor Reece Williams at the minute is like a fish out of water. Bless him. And it's not really his fault. It's hard on him, but you know, he's a lad who was at Kidderminster on loan, and now he's playing for Liverpool. That's in one half season where he wasn't expected to do it.
Yeah, Liverpool's Champions League hopes, Liverpool's financial future has now been heaped upon the shoulders of a 19-year-old kid who was on loan at Kidderminster last season.
Yeah, and I remember I remember on previous shows I was saying like I would play whoever's the best centre half, and keep Fabinho in midfield, and I can understand by that in that it's. You're going to have to get away with it at the back. You're going to have to just, again, your goalie's going to have to be wild, and you're going to admit that you're going to give a few away. The issue we've got, and it's looking ahead to the next game, obviously, is that when Reece Williams went to Old Trafford last time, he had his pants pulled down, he was made the show of. I wonder if that's going to be in Klopp's mind, isn't it, where, geez, the FA Cup game, he was poor, Marcus Rashford had him on toast almost. But then you're almost cutting your nose off to spite your face at times. So you're putting Fabinho back there. Well, who's number six? Genie's going to play six. Okay, is that a better option in this one game? It possibly is. Rafa Benitez used to always talk about, didn't he? You move the duvet over.
Blanket.
And someone else is called over that side. And that's where we're going to be. Listen, mate, there's no team in the world who could lose their first three centre halves by two and lose them and still be absolutely fine. Like, it's just like, you know, if you take Stones, Diaz, Ake, Laporte out of Man City, and they play, and then they're playing Garcia and then Fernandinho, they're still a good team. It's better options than what we've got, but they're still not as good. You know, they moaned last year that they lost the league because Laporte got injured and they had to play Fernandinho at the back a lot. We saw it happen, so they went and addressed it. I still think Liverpool got the summer wrong. I think they got January. Yeah. January was a disgrace how left Lady left it, and they're probably paying for it now. But
the point is, Steve, is that we can say that for all we want, but maybe we got Kabak in a week early. Maybe Liverpool, you know, maybe points wise, we're a few points better off because of all of that. But we've seen. There's no guarantee. Like, what happened? We bought Kabak and Davies in, and Fabinho immediately got injured. You know, this is the point. We could have bought someone in for £50 million in January, and they could have missed the rest of the season. I know it sounds mad, and in a normal world, that wouldn't be me, like, fear-mongering. But every single person who plays at the back for Liverpool has been injured this season at one point or another. Phillips missed, you know, was out the other week, nearly misses the Man United game. You know, we was that problem. Everyone, I mean, Sam, this is the point, isn't it, Sam? I agree with Steve's point in hindsight, and even at the time, without hindsight, it was obvious we needed more. But it's so ridiculous. There is a point where you've just got to throw your arms up in the air or sit in the corner and cry and rock, because there's seemingly nothing you can do about it. It's insane. It's like the captain and the vice captain both out injured for that game at the weekend as well. On top of that, it's insane. Yeah.
And that goes amiss all the time, doesn't it? The leadership sort of qualities, as great as Genie is, he's not the same, is he, as Milner and Hendo and even Van Dijk. But you know when Spurs Stadium was getting built, and there was all those videos, the Arsenal fans putting the shirt in the concrete and all that, and when Main Stand was getting built, there was all the Man U fans, the Everton fans. I reckon a load of Blue Noses must have built the Axe of Kirby ground and just put a load of mines in the floor. Honestly, God, what are they doing back there? I can't believe it. Like, they were all fit for Man U and then unfit for the next game. It's crazy. But it is an interesting sort of scenario. What does Klopp do if Kabak's injured? So, yeah, still, he's not quite recovered, but Davies is fit. Because Reece Williams, for me, I don't think it'd be smart to play him again against Man United. And if Bruno Fernandes, who, in my opinion, is in the top three player of the year candidates, you know, as much as we hate him, you can't deny that, he's quality. Yeah. He's playing in the number 10, and you take your best DM in the world, who's still seen that, even by Neville and Carragher, out and put him in centre-back, and they give Fernandes free reign against maybe Thiago. You can't do that. So does he put Davies in? And I say, that's Arsenal is your big game. Because,
well, there's your big... Well, look at the choices,
big
Sam.
Choice, that, yeah.
Well, look at the choices. You know, you've got... And this is all dependent upon Phillips actually being fit and available, because you just do know it's 2 days away. Anything could happen, couldn't it? But you're right. As it starts, from what we know, you know, the talk is that Kabak won't be available. I'm hoping there's a little bit of gamesmanship going on there, because does that sucker United into thinking, oh, actually, maybe, you know, how their team selection is affected for Leicester, because Solskjaer's having to balance who gets minutes where, and if he thinks Liverpool are going to be weakened at the back... Does that? I don't know whether that means he goes stronger for Liverpool or stronger for Leicester. I don't know, but it's an interesting conundrum, because you've got Reece Williams again, who's obviously, you know, he's young, he's experienced. He was fine. I thought he was quite good against Southampton, to be honest. That, you know, that one moment where he gets done for pace aside, but then he's slow. What do you want? You know, that can happen to anyone. Obviously, Phillips, I think, will be first name on the team sheet at this point, which is a mad statement. And then you're right, you've got Davies, but Kometio makes his way on the bench. And so you're left with, do you play Reece Williams, who's played the most games of those lads? And he's a bit of a known entity, and he's played with Nat Phillips, albeit like twice. Do you put Davies in, who's much more experienced but has never kicked a ball for us? Or do you put Kometio in, who's got what, 10 minutes of senior experience in an away European game, was it? Like, you know, earlier on in the season, who's probably just 18.
Yeah.
Or do you just put Fabinho and then capsize? This is where Jürgen's going to earn his big bucks.
Well, it's interesting because statistically, when Fabinho plays the back recently anyway, we haven't been great. You know, without a Van Dijk or a Gomez next to him, we've not been great. We've looked at this, haven't we? I think Maguire not being fit, he's not going to be fit, is a massive point for this as well, because one of the things that Man U do, which is great, is Maguire's a decent pass for the ball and he pings it over the top for Rashford or for Greenwood or for whoever's up there. They play route one sometimes and get in behind. They're not going to have that this game because none of the other centre-backs are as good as that. So that almost could play into Reece Williams' hands, in that you might not get those direct balls missing out the midfield. Also, I think that another factor into the decision you talked about will be tonight's results. If Man U turn Leicester over tonight, I don't think it matters what happens on Thursday, because I think we've just got to match their result this week. That's just my personal opinion anyway. So if they go win tonight, we've almost got a free hit on Thursday, and then it goes into next week anyway, and Leicester obviously got those horrific games. So I think all these little things, factors, injuries tonight, et cetera, will play into the hands of that. But you know what? I'd love to see. You've got to play Fabinho centre mid for me. And I don't care if Davies hasn't played. If he's fit and he doesn't fancy Williams, I want to see him in the team.
Yeah. The danger with that is, and I agree, and this has been the case for the past few weeks, if Fabinho plays at centre mid and we play a Davies or Reece Williams and one of them makes a mistake, everyone powers on the back. So he's damned if he doesn't, damned if he doesn't, in what he picks in that sense. So it's, you know, it's what do you do? Our personal preference for this game, I'd say Fabinho, and I trust in that more experienced midfield to actually pull something out of the bag. I get the stuff Fernandez like does me head in because he's so good, you need someone on him, but I think it's the lesser of two evils if you've got a more experienced, mature centre-half in Fabinho, for me.
Fabinho's so important for me to just winning football matches. It's just no accident that our form has turned around since we put Fabinho back into midfield. It's the closest thing we've got to causation, correlation in a season. If we can point to anything, that's the most obvious thing I could say in this. But I get it, that takes some bottles of difference between going up against Southampton without Danny Ings.
What, Cavani, Greenwood, Rashford? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, but he might also look at it and go, you know, look, again, Reece Williams went up against Harry Kane and Son at Anfield earlier on in the season and did a reasonable job in that. You know, he's clearly got a game in his locker, and just having that slight greater understanding, it'd be a mad one if Ben Davies just appeared out of nowhere. Like I would have him come in on a zip wire, you know what I mean, or something, just to make it, just to mark the occasion. Shawn Michaels, WrestleMania style, whatever it takes, just to don't announce the teams, just leave a question mark in that position. And who's it gonna be? Who's gonna be his tag team partner tonight? It's Michael's music.
He might not.
It's Davies. Oh my God. Oh my God. It's Davies.
He might not want to play. He might think he's going to get fucking injured anyway. What's the point?
Do any of you know his number?
073.
I haven't got to tell you what his number is. I don't know what his shirt number is.
No. No, I've no idea. No. There you go. Anyone in the comments know that? Let us know.
Might just get signed a random one. They probably don't even know his fucking name. Never mind his number.
If this was Sunday League, you could get a ringer in and just say it's Ben Davies and nobody would know. Come find like a free agent and go, Ben!
Genuinely.
He used to play for Preston.
Ben's playing Ben Woodburn. No, Ben Davies.
Yeah, honestly, I think we'd be more likely to see Ben Woodburn playing dead centre-half at this point.
No, it's mad. Like, Nat Phillips is just like nailed on first choice Liverpool centre half now. Like that's a thing that's just
nobody talks about it.
Imagine in August saying end of the season when you're battling for like, in major games, first name on the team sheet's Nat Phillips. You're like, what? How's that happening?
Got to have Big Nat in. Big Nat has to start at Old Trafford.
The last number that we did, and we did before the original game, was like we need Nat Phillips at centre half. Like if we don't win him, we need him to win games, and we do.
Yeah, I mean, he'll, the thing that's going to be telling for them, and I wonder whether this will impact United's approach, is I think as much as you've got Cavani with his guile and all that thing, and that will cause us problems, you want pace up front in this game, you know, because none of our options are going to be particularly fast. You know, not lightning quick in this regard. So I think it's one of them where United will gear towards that, certainly. Singh is king with the super chat. Man United fan, judging by his badge, says, what if the game gets postponed again? # Glazers out. I mean, that we were joking about this. Oh, sorry, actually, Eth Sham in the comments said Ben Davies wore 28. When did he wear that? Maybe was it in his announcement video? I don't know. I mean, this is an interesting situation, isn't it? I can't imagine there's talk of like dummy decoy buses and all kinds to the United team. There's going to be all kinds of plans in place for this. There's no way this game's going to get stopped again by the fans. But there's no way they don't just give us the points if that happens again.
Yeah, I mean, again, there's talk of protest again as we're recording this. They're playing Leicester. There's talk of protests around that game, and who knows? Like, I wouldn't be as confident as you that it's just going to be played. Like, who knows? Like, if too many people, like, even there's a perimeter at some point, there's not a perimeter, and that's where, like, there's going to be people there. So, listen, mate, if the fans want it stopped, they'll stop it. It's hard not to, really. It could get really ugly. See, I mean, I hope it doesn't, like, in terms of like protesting and stuff. Listen, I think, if it goes again, I can't imagine them trying to squeeze it in somewhat. Sky will be devastated because it's their cash cow game, but at some point, it's just it'd have to just take action against Man United if two games get called off. But I'm with you, is that I think I think that we'll be. I think we're all aware that there's stuff getting planned, isn't it, around the protest and stuff. How they do it and how peaceful it is and where it all comes into play. It is an important factor. I think. Judge again. We're recording before the rest of the game, but the talk is, man, you played a really weakened under 23s game last night. So a lot of them are in their squad for tonight. So I think he is going at it as rest for Leicester, beat Liverpool, which I completely understand. If we were in that situation, I'd do the exact same. I'd rather Leicester get Champions League than Man United. So I can completely see why they're doing it. I think a lot will be instructed by tonight. Are there protests around the game tonight? And if there are, then I think Thursday could be a little bit like, I think there's a lot of nervous police officers and a lot of nervous officials looking ahead to that game. But it's got, you know, it's a powder keg at the minute. It just needs that one little spark, and it could go off.
The thing that never helped was that Avram Glazer, when he tried to interview us at Sky Sports News that were following him around, he could, like, well, everything that he's done has not helped the situation, but in that situation where he's got an opportunity to say something, he could have diffused the situation, and because he hasn't, my United fans aren't going to give
up. Well, they put another letter out after that, didn't he? Say, you know, another, like, we're going to engage, we're going to blah, 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 and it's obviously not been accepted again.
But that's what I'm talking about, the Liverpool stuff before, and the speed of the process of that. My United fans are still like, well, a week ago, whatever it was, we got a game called off. Nothing's changed.
The Glazers have had 15 years of ignoring it, and it peaks, and it rises and falls, but there's nothing they can do to force them out. But you are seeing this talk about, like, impacting sponsors and stuff. That's Man United's best fans' best approach is to start to get sponsors to turn against the club. When you hit them in the pockets, that's and damage the share price. That's when it's a worthwhile thing.
I also think, Paul, I don't think anything the Glazers could do now that would appease Man United fans except leave. Getting people on the board, having talks, there's nothing they can do. They're at a point now where the fans will not accept anything until those fellas aren't there anymore. And it might never happen. And I think that's the key, is that you talk about dialogue and stuff. I don't think we would never have got to a point with Hicks and Gillette where we were like, oh yeah, Sam, it's fine, come back in. Like, you have to know. And that's where United are with the Glazers. So I don't think, if Joel Glazer would have stopped, you know, combed his pony tail and said, listen, I'm really sorry, we're going to do this, this and this. No one would have cared. They passed the point.
No, I agree.
It's better being ignored, though, isn't it?
No, but also, you say that, but there's lots and lots and lots of fans who follow football clubs who just like words, and they do like to hear those things, and they do like to just hear, oh, and if you come out and gone, oh, we're gonna sort it out. We're gonna make Man United the best football club on the planet once again. You just go full Nigel Farage. You just say a load of nonsense, you know, positive nonsense. And there's a lot of people who would just buy into it. And that's not to question Man United fans. All fans of football like that. I'm seeing loads of people saying FSG needs to just buy Liverpool loads of players in the summer, and that'll fix the problems. It won't. You know, there's wider things that need to be done. But that's the kind of things that you can do to appease. I might even go as far as the masses, because for a lot of people, football and their football clubs are a pastime. They just want the team to have the biggest players and win football matches. They're not as bothered about, like, they're being ingrained in it on a you know, 7 day a week thing. Just moving things forward then, Sam, obviously we can discuss this more when we're building up to the game at the weekend, but the final three games post Man United, and this is why it's so important, I think, to get, you know, if we can get 3 points at Old Trafford, even against the odds. West Brom, Burnley, Palace. West Brom relegated now, Burnley and Palace nothing to play for left. The league is, you know, it's done. I think everyone wants to just get off and go and have a holiday at this point. That they're games that Liverpool should be worried about, because they're the kind of teams that do cause us problems. But now, given the way that it's sort of fallen, we've got a bit of a renewed hope that they might just be like, ah, fucking whatever.
Yeah, I think they take care of themselves, those games, genuinely. I mean, I know we've made mistakes in the season, but I genuinely believe that when it gets to if we get to a position where we pretty much know that, you know, for instance, let's say Arsenal get a draw against Chelsea or beat Chelsea, which, you know, it's not completely out of this world with all the games of football Chelsea have had to play. You know, we could be in a situation next week where, because they've got to play each other, it's almost in our hands to get fourth or to be in goal difference shout. And I think that if you get to that position with those three games of football, I would not be concerned at all. I think our lads would have enough motivation. Also, there's another factor that a lot of people have missed when discussing these games, is that Burnley are going to have fans in the stadium. I think that helps us as well, because it brings normality and it brings, like, atmosphere, and it brings ups and downs when you score and quieting the fans and stuff like that. I think that's what football's missed, and away teams as well as home teams have missed. So I actually think if it comes to it, that will help us as well as it will against Palace. So if things remain as they are almost now, come Friday, I'm confident we'll go into those three games and do what we need to do. I'm just a bit concerned about the integrity of the league for both us, Everton and West Ham after this week, because both of those games against United could be affected by fans and by injuries. And I think the integrity of what the Premier League have done putting this game on here is at risk.
Yeah, absolutely. Just lastly then, we got a super chat coming from Sly Ross 1. Is this your...
Yeah.
it's you with a moustache.
One of any, yeah.
Taylor, Tierney, Coote all involved in the game Thursday. Yeah, Anthony Taylor will be refereeing. David Coote will be on the VAR. I mean, if Liverpool are going to get into the top four, a lot of this is a situation we've engineered ourselves by our own shitness at times, but this is going to be a gauntlet of a final fortnight. And it starts with getting past the king of all crap referees in Anthony Taylor, the king of all crap VAR officials in David Coote, and of course United at Old Trafford.
Yeah, they're all cunts, aren't they?
Yes, there you go. Couldn't have said it any better. There you go, Ross. Well, that'll do. I don't think we can really add to any analysis of that. Right, that is the podcast for this week. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us live and all your comments. You guys are absolutely amazing. Do check out the exclusive interview with James Pearce streaming right now on the RedmenTV.com as we start to look ahead to summer. We've got some amazing content lined up for you. We've got an amazing documentary series which is going to be launching after the season, which we're going to be doing some more on publicly in the coming days, so keep your eyes and ears peeled on that one as well. And yeah, we'll be wrapping up the season in all the normal ways and beyond with some incredible exclusive interviews, so keep your eyes peeled on that, all streaming on the redmentv.com. Right, yes, gents, thank you so much for that. It's been an absolute pleasure. In a way, we discovered Chris Pajak would be the king of Takeshi's castle one way or another, and Liverpool have got a chance to capture a march on their rivals for top four on Thursday. Yes, fingers crossed. We'll see it all soon. Ta-da.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.